euphoria he was experiencing. All this touching, caressing, kissing was giving him pleasure while it gave me terror. I felt cheated, angry, ready to hurt him with my screams when he tugged off my nightgown and threw it away like a rag. They'd done that. His hands were all over me, finding everything but what he seemed to be seeking. I hated where he had his hand and was glad when he swore to himself as his fingers worked madly. Then he sighed and rolled on top of me, and I felt his hardness. Oh, the rocking chair. I was in it again, rocking to and fro. I saw the woods, heard the obscene words shouted, heard the laughter. But it was too late. I felt him jabbing deep into me, thick and hot and slippery wet. I fought to free myself, bucking, kicking, scratching. I clawed deep into the skin of his back, raked at his naked buttocks, but he didn't stop. He kept on jabbing, causing the same kind of shame, the same kind of pain as they had caused her. His face. Was that Arden's boyish face with his hair plastered to his forehead? His eyes bulging as he stared before? No. No, Arden hadn't been born then. He was just another like them, that was all. All men alike. All alike. Alike. Like. Blurrily, I was drifting, losing sense of reality. Aunt Elsbeth had been right when she said I was too sensitive. I should never have led Arden on and allowed him to believe I would be the perfect wife. I couldn't be any kind of wife at all. His hot ejaculations came then. Scream, scream, but the thunder overhead muffled my cries. Nobody heard, not even him. I tasted my own blood on my lips from the bite of my teeth that tried to cut off my screams. Only Arden, who loved me. This was the way physical love had to be, and one more last heaving thrust nearly ripped me apart. Then, spinning off, all terror and shame faded. Blackness mercifully took me, and I felt nothing. Nothing at all. Morning light wakened me. Sylvia was slouched in the corner of our bedroom playing with her prisms, her nightgown riding up to her hips. With her vacant eyes looking at nothing, her lips parted and drooling, she crouched there, limp as a rag. My husband rolled over, came awake, and reached for my breasts as if they belonged to him. He kissed them first, then my lips.
"Darling, I love you so much."
More kisses he rained on my face, my neck, all over my naked body, and Sylvia was there, though I'm sure he didn't see her.
"At first you seemed so tight. So scared. Then all of a sudden you seized hold of me and eagerly surrendered. Oh, Adrina, I was hoping you'd be like that."
What was he saying? How could I believe his words when his eyes were pleading the way they were? Yet I allowed him to fake his satisfaction, realizing that he'd had some, while I'd had nothing but pain, shame, and humiliation. And far, far back in my perforated memory was the scent of blood, of damp earth and wet leaves. And Adrina was stumbling home, trying to hold the shreds of an expensive dress together to cover her nudity. Part 3. Home Again. As we drove up our long, curving drive, I saw Papa standing on the front porch, as if he'd known in advance this was our day to come home. He towered there, a formidable giant, wearing a spanking new white suit, white shoes, with a bright blue shirt and a white tie with silver and blue diagonal stripes. I quivered and looked at Arden, whose eyes met mine with a great deal of apprehension. What would Papa do? With one hand I clung to Arden's arm, my other held Sylvia's, as all three of us slowly ascended the steps to the front porch. All the time, Papa's fiery gaze clashed with mine, silently accusing me of betraying him, failing him. Then, done with me, he turned those dark, piercing eyes on Arden as if to weigh him and his strength as an opponent. Papa smiled warmly and thrust out his huge hand for my new husband to shake.
"Well,"
he said genially,
"how nice to see all of you again."
He pumped Arden's hand up and down, endlessly, it seemed. I was proud to see Arden didn't wince, To squeeze too firmly in a friendly handshake was Papa's way of determining a man's physical strength and emotional character. He knew his powerful grip hurt, and a man who grimaced was crossed off his list and labeled weak. Turning to me then, he said,
"You have disappointed me deeply."
Casually, he patted Sylvia on the top of her head as if she were some pesky puppy. 3 times he kissed my cheeks, one, then the other, but at the same time he managed to reach behind me to pinch my bottom so hard I wanted to cry out. This kind of pinch was meant to test a woman's endurance, and her reactions were noted, labeled, filed. Let him label me as he would. "Don't you ever pinch me like that again," I said fiercely. "That hurts, and I don't like it. I have never liked it, and neither did my mother or my aunt."
"My, what a saucy bit of baggage you've become in 4 days," he said with a wide, mocking grin.
Then he reached to playfully pat my cheek, and it felt like a slap.
"You didn't need to elope, my sweetheart,"
he said in a soft, loving purr.
"It would have been my pleasure, my joy, to walk you down the center aisle and see you wearing your mother's beautiful wedding gown."
Just when I thought nothing he did could ever surprise me, he caught me off guard.
"Arden, I've been talking to your mother about you, and she tells me you've had some difficulty finding the kind of position you want with a good architectural firm. I admire you for not accepting a third-rate job in a second-rate firm, so until you find the kind of position you really want, why not accept a junior account executive position with my brokerage firm? Adrina can help teach you the ropes so you can pass the exam, and, of course, I'll do what I can to help. Though she knows almost as much as I do."
This wasn't what I wanted. Yet, as I glanced at Arden, I saw he was very relieved. This offer would solve a lot of problems. Now we'd have an income and could rent a small apartment in the city, far from Whitefern. Arden appeared very grateful and glanced at me as if I'd over-exaggerated Papa's desire to keep me all for himself. How like Papa to take a situation he disliked and turn it around to his advantage. Good-looking, young account executives were much in demand, and Arden was smart and good with math.
"Yes, Arden,"
he expounded, putting a friendly, fatherly arm over my husband's shoulders.
"My daughter can teach you the fundamentals and the technical side, too."
His voice was smooth, easy, relaxed.
"She is almost as knowledgeable as I am, and perhaps even better since the market is not a science but an art. Adrina has a stranglehold on sensitivity and intuition. Right, Adrina?"
He gave me another smile of great charm. Then, while Arden wasn't looking, he quickly reached to pinch my bottom again, even harder. He smiled, and when Arden glanced our way again, Papa was hugging me lovingly.
"Now,"
he continued,
"I have another wonderful surprise for you."
He beamed at both of us.
"I've taken the liberty of moving your mother out of that miserable little cottage. She is now established upstairs in the best rooms we have."
His polished smile shone again.
"That is, the best next to my own."
It hurt to see Arden so grateful when he should have known better. Perhaps all men were more or less alike, and understood each other very well. I raged inside that Papa was still controlling my life, even though I was married. Cozily established in what had been my aunt's rooms, made grand in a useless effort to please her, was Billy, dressed like a stage star in a fancy lace dress that should have been seen only at a garden party. Her bright eyes glowing, she gushed, "He stormed over to my place about an hour after you drove away and raged at me for encouraging the two of you to elope. I didn't say a word until he calmed down. Then I think he really looked at me for the first time. He told me I was beautiful. I was wearing my shorts, too, with those damned stumps sticking out, and he didn't seem to care. Darling, you just don't know what that did for my ego." Papa was clever. So clever. I should have expected he'd find a way to defeat me. Now he had my mother-in-law on his side. Then he said we should make the best of a situation that couldn't be changed, and that wonderful man invited me to come and live here and share your lives and his. Wasn't that gracious of him? Of course it was. I glanced around at the room I thought should be a shrine to my aunt's memory and ached inside. And yet, what good were shrines when Billy was so grateful? and Aunt Elsbeth had never appreciated anything done to make her rooms pretty. Certainly, if anyone deserved rooms like these, it was Billy.
Adrina, you never told me your father is so kind, understanding, and charming. Somehow, you always made him seem insensitive, conniving, and abusive.
How could I tell her Papa's good looks and contrived charms were his stocks in trade? He used them on all women, young, middle-aged, and old. 90% of his clients were wealthy older women who totally depended on his advice, and the other 10% were wealthy men too old to have good judgment of their own.
Adrina, darling,
Billy went on, holding me against her full, firm breasts.
Your father is such a dear, so sweet and concerned about everyone's welfare. A man like Damien Adair could never be cruel. I'm sure you misunderstood if you think he mistreated you.
Papa had followed us upstairs, and until she said this, I hadn't seen him leaning gracefully against the door frame, taking all of this in. He spoke to Arden in the sudden silence.
My daughter has been raving about you since she was 7 years old. God knows I never thought puppy love would last. Why, I loved a dozen girls or more by the time I was 10, and 200 before I married Adrina's mother.
Arden smiled, appearing embarrassed, and soon he was thanking Papa for offering him a job when no one else had, and a decent salary for someone with absolutely no training as a broker. And so again, Papa had won. Aunt Elsbeth was dead. She had not saved me any more than she'd saved herself. Only Papa was free to time and time again hurt those he claimed to love most. Soon Papa was talking seriously to me and Arden about giving him a grandson.
I've always wanted a son,
he said while looking directly into my eyes. It hurt, really hurt to hear him say that when he'd always claimed I was enough to please him. He must have seen my pain, for he smiled, as if I'd been tested and he found me still faithful.
Second to a daughter, I wanted a son, that is. A grandson will do just fine, since I already have two daughters.
I didn't want a baby yet, not when just being Arden's wife was traumatic enough. Bit by painful bit, I was learning how to cope with those nightly acts of love that seemed atrocious to me and wonderful to him. I even learned to fake pleasure so he stopped looking so anxious and allowed himself to believe that I was now enjoying sex just as much as he did. Even before Arden and I returned from our seashore honeymoon, Billy had taken over in the kitchen Aunt Elsbeth had so recently abandoned. Billy had her high stool there, carried over with most of her other belongings by my own father, who detested physical labor. I watched him as he watched her with admiration, adroitly putting meals together without one grumble, and not much fuss either. She smiled, laughed in response to his many jokes. She cared expertly for his clothes and ran the huge house with so little effort that Papa couldn't stop admiring her remarkable efficiency.
How do you do it, Billy? Why do you even want to? Why don't you tell me to hire servants to wait on you?
Oh, no, Damien. It's the least I can do to repay you for all that you're doing for us.
Her voice was soft and her eyes warm as she looked at him.
I'm so grateful that you wanted me and have welcomed my son as your own that I can never do enough. Anyway, having servants in the house steals your privacy.
I stared at Billy, wondering how a woman with her experience could be so easily fooled. Papa used people. Didn't she realize that she was saving him tons of money by being his housekeeper and cook, and that generous offer to hire servants was all fraud, calculated to make her feel she wasn't being used?
Adrina, said Billy one day when I'd been married about 2 months and Arden was still studying for his broker's exam. I've been watching Sylvia. For some reason, she dislikes me and would like to see me gone. I'm trying to think as she might think. It could be she's jealous because she sees you love me too, and she's never had to share your love with others. When I was in the cottage, it was different, but now I'm in her home and stealing your attention and your time from her. Arden is her competition, too, but for some reason, maybe because he leaves her alone, she isn't jealous of him. It's me she's jealous of. What's more, I don't believe she's nearly as retarded as you think. She mimics you, Adrina. Whenever you turn your back, she follows you, and she can walk just as normally as you do, when she knows you can't see her.
Whipping around, I caught Sylvia just behind me. She appeared startled, and quickly her closed lips parted, and her focused eyes went vacant, blind-looking. "Billy, you shouldn't say things like that. She can hear. And if what you say is true, although I don't believe it is, she might understand and be hurt."
"Of course she understands," said Billy. "She isn't brilliant, but she's not beyond the pale."
"I don't understand why she'd pretend."
"Who told you she's hopelessly retarded?"
Sylvia had drifted out into the hall, tugging Billy's little red cart along with her. As I watched, she sat upon it and began to shove herself along in Billy's fashion. "Papa didn't bring her home until she was more than 2.5 years old. He told me what her doctors had told him."
"I admire Damien a great deal, although I don't admire the way he's burdened your life with the care of your younger sister, especially when he could afford to pay for a nurse to care for her, or better, a therapist to train her. Do what you can to teach her skills and continue with your speech training. Don't give up on Sylvia. Even if those doctors gave what they thought was an honest evaluation, mistakes are often made. There's always hope and a chance for improvement."
In the months that followed, Billy convinced me that perhaps I had misjudged my father after all. She obviously adored him, even worshipped him. He ignored her legless condition and treated her with such gallantry, he surprised me and pleased Arden. Papa even had a special wheelchair custom made for Billy. He hated her little red cart with a passion, though the fancy R kind of chair with concealed wheels didn't speed around fast enough for her. She never used that chair unless Papa was around. Arden worked like an Egyptian slave in the day, then studied half the night, trying to remember all he needed to know for his broker exams. It was what he said he wanted, but I knew his heart wasn't in it. "Arden, if you don't want to be a broker, give it up and do something else."
"I do want it. Go on. Teach."
"Now," I began when he was seated across the table in our bedroom, "they will give you several kinds of tests to judge your reading ability and comprehension of the written word. Then comes your verbal agility, and you'll have to understand what you're saying, which goes without saying." I smiled at him and shoved his roving foot away from my leg. "Answer, please. Would you rather paint a picture, look at a picture, or sell a picture?"
"Paint a picture,"
Arden answered quickly. Frowning, I shook my head. "Second question. Would you rather read a book, write a book, or sell a book?"
"Write a book. But I guess that's wrong. The right answer is sell a book. Sell a picture, right?"
After 3 failures came the passing exam, and my husband became a Wall Street cowboy. One day, when my work was through, I wandered into the room where my mother's piano was. I smiled ironically to myself as I pulled out Aunt Mercy Marie's photograph and set it on the grand piano. Who would have ever thought I'd do such a crazy thing on my own? Perhaps it was because I was thinking about my aunt and how I'd missed her funeral. To make up for that, I went often to the graveyard to put flowers on her grave, and on my mother's grave, too. Never, never did I bring any flowers for the first Adrina. In memory of them, I began my own tea time. As I began the routine once performed by 2 other sisters, Sylvia crept into the room and sat on the floor near my feet, staring up into my face with a look of bewilderment. A weird sensation of time repeating itself stole over me.
"Lucetta," said the fat-faced woman I was speaking for, "what a lovely girl your 3rd daughter is. Sylvia, such a beautiful name. Who is Sylvia? There used to be an old song about a girl named Sylvia. Lucetta, play that song again for me, please."
"Of course, Mercy Marie," I said in a good imitation of how I remembered my mother speaking.
"Isn't she beautiful, my sweet Sylvia? I think she is the most beautiful of all my 3 girls.
I banged out some tune on the piano that was pitifully amateurish. But, like a marionette controlled by fate, I couldn't quit once I'd begun my act. Smiling, I handed Sylvia a cookie. "And now you talk for the lady in the photograph." Jumping to her feet with surprising agility, Sylvia ran to the piano, seized up the photograph of Aunt Mercy Marie, and hurled it into the fireplace. The silver frame broke, the glass shattered, and soon the photo in Sylvia's hands was torn into shreds. Finished, and a bit scared-looking, Sylvia backed away from me.
"How dare you do that?" I yelled. That was the only picture we had of our mother's best friend. You've never done anything like that before. Falling down on her knees, she crawled to me, whimpering like a small puppy, and she was 10 years old now. Crouched at my feet, Sylvia clawed at my skirt, allowing her lips to part, and soon spittle wet her chin and dribbled down on her loose, shift-like garment. A small child couldn't have looked into my eyes with more innocence. Billy had to be mistaken. Sylvia couldn't focus her eyes but for a second or two. In my dreams that night, while Arden slept peacefully at my side, it seemed I heard drums beating, natives chanting, animals howled. Bolting awake, I started to wake up Arden, then decided the animals howling was only Sylvia screaming again. I ran to her room to take her into my arms. "What's wrong, darling?" I swear, I think she tried to say, "Bad, bad, bad." But I wasn't truly sure. "Did you say bad?" Her aqua eyes were wide with fright, but she nodded. I broke into laughter and hugged her closer. "No, it's not bad that you can talk. Oh, Sylvia, I've tried so hard to teach you, and at last you're trying. You had a bad dream, that's all. Go back to sleep and think how wonderful your life is going to be now that you can communicate." "Yes," I told myself as I snuggled up close to Arden, liking his arms about me when he wasn't passionate. That's all it was, a bad dream Sylvia had. Thanksgiving Day was a week away. I was more or less happy as I sat with Billy in the kitchen and planned the menu. Yet I still treaded the long halls like a child, still taking care not to step on any of the colorful, geometric patterns the stained glass windows cast on the floor. I'd stop and stare for long moments at the rainbows on the walls, just as I had when I was a child. My memories of childhood were still so hazy. As I left the kitchen and started for the stairs, with the notion of visiting that playroom and evoking the past, challenging it to reveal the truth, I turned to find Sylvia trailing me like a shadow. Of course, I'd grown accustomed to her being my constant companion, but what surprised me was the way she managed to catch a random sunbeam with that crystal prism she clutched and flash the colors directly into my eyes. Almost blinded, I staggered backward, for some reason terrified. In the shadows near the wall, I dropped the hand I'd used to shade my eyes and stared toward the huge chandelier that caught all the colors already on the marble floor. The mirrors on the walls refracted them back to Sylvia, who directed them again at me, as if to keep me from the playroom. Dizzy and unreal feeling, visions flashed in my head. I saw my aunt sprawled face down on the hard foyer floor. What if Sylvia had been downstairs in the foyer and had used that prism to blind my aunt's eyes with sunlight colors? Could that have made my aunt dizzy enough to fall? Was Sylvia trying to make me fall too? "Put that thing down, Sylvia," I yelled. "Put it away. Never flash those lights in my eyes again. Do you hear me?" Like the wild thing Papa compared her to, she ran. Stunned for a moment, I could only stare after her. Feeling frightened of my own violent reaction, I sat on the bottom step and tried to pull myself together. And that's when the front door opened. A woman stood there, tall and slender, wearing a smart hat of many shades of green feathers. A mink cape was slung casually over one shoulder, and her green shoes matched her very expensive-looking green suit.
"Hi," she said in a sultry voice. "Here I am, back again. Don't you recognize me, sweet Adrina?"
A Second Life.
"What are you doing?" called Vera, as much in the manner of a very young child. I began to back up the stairs without standing up. "Aren't you a bit old for such childish behavior? Really, Adrina, you don't change at all, do you?"
Striding into the foyer, Vera hardly appeared to limp, but when I checked, I saw that the left sole of her high-heeled shoes was an inch thicker than the right sole. Gracefully, she approached the stairs.
"I stopped off in the village, and they told me you really did marry Arden Lowe. I never thought you'd be adult enough to marry anyone. Congratulations to him, the fool, and my best wishes to you, the bride who should have known better."
The trouble was, what she said could very well be true.
"Aren't you glad to see me?"
"Your mother is dead." How cruelly I said that, as if I wanted to even the score and dish out pain for pain.
Really, Adrina? I know that.
Her dark eyes were cold as she looked me up and down, telling me in her own silent, eloquent way that I was no competition for her.
Unlike you, sweet Adrina, I have friends in the village who keep me posted as to what goes on here. I wish I could say I was sorry, but I can't. Elsbeth Whitefern was never a real mother to me, was she? Your mother was kinder.
She turned around slowly and exhaled a long, withheld breath.
Wow. Would you look at this place? Like a palace. Who would have ever thought dear Papa would be idiot enough to fix up an old house like this?
He could have bought 2 new ones for what it cost to restore this monstrosity. Standing midway up the stairs, I tried to regain some lost composure. Did you come back for some reason?
Aren't you happy to see me?
Smiling, she cocked her head to one side and scanned over me again, then laughed.
No, I can tell you aren't. Are you still afraid of me, Adrina? Afraid your boy husband might find a real woman twice as appealing as a modest, shy bride who can't really give him any pleasure? Just looking at you in that white dress tells me you haven't changed.
It's November, little girl. Winter time. The season for bright colors, parties, good cheer, and holidays. And you wear a white dress. Mockingly, she laughed again.
Don't tell me your husband is no lover at all and you are still Papa's pure little darling.
It's a wool dress, Vera. The color is called winter white. It's an expensive dress that Arden selected for me himself. He likes for me to wear white.
Of course he does,
she said even more mockingly.
He indulges your need to stay a sweet little girl. Poor Adrina, the sweet and chaste. Adrina, the pure and virginal. Dear Adrina, the obedient little darling who can do no wrong.
What do you want, Vera? I asked, feeling very cold. I sensed danger, felt Vera's threat. I wanted to order her out of the house. Go, leave me alone. Give me time to grow up, to find the woman that's hidden somewhere in me.
I've come home for Thanksgiving,
said Vera smoothly, in that same sexy voice she must have copied from someone she admired, as she'd tried once to talk like a TV actress.
And if you're nice to me, really nice, as a family member should be, then I'll stay on for Christmas, too. It's really not very hospitable of you to keep me standing in the foyer while my bags are on the porch. Where's Arden? He can carry my luggage.
My husband is working, Vera, and you can bring in your own bags. Papa won't be happy to see you. I suppose you must know that.
Yes, Adrina. She said in that smooth, hateful voice. I know that, but I want to see Papa. He owes me a great deal, and I intend to have what belongs to my mother and what belongs to me.
A small scuttling sound made me look toward the back hall to see Billy shoveling along on her little red dolly cart. As if she'd just seen a mouse, Vera jumped backward and nearly lost her footing because of that thick sole. Her gloved hand reached to smother her cry. Her other hand stretched forward as if to ward off contamination. I watched her struggle to gain her composure as the small half-woman, twice as old and 3 times as beautiful as Vera, looked at her appraisingly and with a great deal of self-composure. I admired Billy for holding her own. Then, to my amazement, Vera smiled brilliantly at my mother-in-law.
Oh, of course. How can I have forgotten Billy Lowe? How are you, Mrs. Lowe?
Cheerfully, Billy greeted Vera.
Why, hello there. You're Vera, aren't you? How beautiful you look. How nice you've come home for the holidays. You're just in time for lunch. Your old room is clean, and all I have to do is put on fresh linens and you'll feel right at home.
She looked upward to give me a special warm smile.
Well, Adrina, that itchy nose of yours really did herald a visitor after all. Do you live here, too?
Asked Vera, rather taken aback. Someone in the village didn't know everything that went on in Whitefern.
Oh, yes,
gushed Billy happily.
This is the most wonderful house I've ever been lucky enough to call home. Damien has been absolutely marvelous to me. He's given me the rooms that used to belong to...
Here she hesitated, looking a bit embarrassed.
Your mother.
Her appealing look at Vera touched my heart.
At first, I thought it was wrong to take such a grand suite of rooms when Adrina might want them. But Adrina hasn't said a word to make me feel I'm usurping anyone's place. What's more, Damien carried over all the things I wanted from the cottage himself. He did that the very day Arden and Adrina eloped.
Billy gave me another loving smile.
Come, darling, it's time for lunch. Sylvia is already at the table. There's plenty for all of us. Help me bring in my luggage, Adrina,
said Vera, abruptly turning to head toward the porch, as if tired of responding to all the warmth and good cheer Billy showed her.
I'll be leaving in a few weeks, so you don't have to look so bothered. I don't want your husband.
Because you have your own? I asked hopefully. Laughing, she half turned to grin at me with Papa's own cunning.
You'd like that, wouldn't you? But no, I don't have my own. Lamar Rensdale was a miserable failure who took the easy way out once things got rough. What a coward he proved to be. No talent at all once you took him away from the provinces. Do you still play the piano?
No, I didn't practice on the piano anymore. There was too much to do. But as I helped Vera bring in her three bags, carrying two while she carried one, I vowed that when I had the time, I'd find another music teacher and pick up where I'd left off. Vera, I'd like to hear more about Lamar Rensdale. He was very kind to me, and I'm sorry he's dead.
Later,
said Vera, following me up the stairs.
After we eat, we'll have a nice long talk while we wait for Papa to come home and rejoice at seeing me again.
On the way to her room, we found Sylvia riding Billy's cart, shoveling along with some expertise. Sylvia, take Billy's cart back to the kitchen. You have no right to use it even when she isn't. Any moment she may want to hop down and her cart won't be there. I reached to pull Sylvia from the dolly. If there was one thing that made Sylvia stubborn and hateful, it was taking from her that little red cart she wanted for her own.
Good God,
exclaimed Vera, staring at Sylvia as if at some creature in a zoo.
Why waste your breath on an idiot? Why not just shove her off and be done with it?
Sylvia is not as retarded as Papa led us to believe, I said innocently enough. Bit by bit, she's learning to talk. For some reason, Vera turned to stare at Sylvia with narrowed, suspicious eyes, distaste clear on her face.
God almighty, this house is full of freaks. A legless woman and a stammering moron.
As long as you're in this house, you will not refer to Sylvia as a moron, idiot, or freak. And you will treat Billy with the respect due her, or else I'm sure that Papa will kick you out. And if he doesn't, then I will. Appearing surprised, Vera smiled weakly, then turned her back and strode on into her old room to unpack. I was silent at lunch as Billy did her best to welcome Vera home. Vera looked sophisticated in the lovely beige knit dress she'd changed into. The soft color flattered her complexion, which seemed not as sallow as it had once been. Her makeup was expertly applied, her hair styled to perfection, while mine was windblown and wild-appearing. My nails were short and unpolished since I had to help Billy with the housekeeping. Every one of my imperfections rose up like mountains as I stared at Vera.
"I'm sorry about your mother, Vera," said Billy. "I hope you don't mind if Adrina told me all about that. She is like my own daughter, the one I always wanted to have."
Gratefully, I smiled, happy she wasn't going to abandon me for Vera, who seemed to have become the epitome of glamour. I knew Billy admired all that Vera now represented. Pretty clothes, long polished nails, and the kind of jewelry Vera wore. That's when I realized it was my mother's jewelry, my aunt's jewelry she was wearing. The stolen jewelry. Jewelry that she took off and stashed somewhere before Papa and my husband came home together. We were seated in the Roman Revival Room. The sun had just settled down behind the horizon, leaving a bloody trail of fire clouds, when Papa threw open the door and strode inside with Arden at his heels. Papa was talking.
"Damn, Arden, how the hell can you forget when you make notes? Do you realize your mistakes are going to lose several good clients? You have to list all the stocks each client owns and call them when dramatic changes occur, or better, before they occur. Anticipate, boy. Anticipate."
That's when Papa saw Vera. He stopped in the middle of another chastising remark and stared at Vera with loathing.
"What the devil are you doing here?"
Billy winced. Papa had disappointed her. Arden threw Vera an uneasy glance, then came to kiss my cheek before he settled on the sofa beside me, putting his arm about my shoulders.
"Are you all right?"
he whispered.
"You look so pale."
I didn't answer, though I did snuggle closer to him, feeling safer with his arm about me. Vera stood up. With her high heels on, she was still about 5 inches shorter than Papa, but on those stilts she managed to look formidable even so. In the corner of the large room, Sylvia squatted down on her heels and rolled her head about idiotically, as if she were deliberately going to undo all the progress we'd both struggled to achieve.
"I had to come home, Papa, to see my mother's grave," said Vera in a small voice of apology. "A friend called and told me when she died, and I cried all night, and really wanted to come for her funeral, but I was on duty and couldn't get off until now. I'm a registered nurse now. Also, I didn't have enough money to get down here, and I knew you wouldn't send me the money to come. It comes as such a shock when someone healthy dies in an accident. That same friend sent me the newspaper obituary. It arrived on the day of her funeral."
She smiled then, tilting her head to one side in a charming manner, separating her feet so she stood staunchly with her arms akimbo. Suddenly, she appeared not so sweet, but defiant, masculine, taking up almost as much space as Papa did when he spread his legs wide and prepared himself for assault. Papa grunted and glared at her. He seemed to recognize her challenge.
"When will you be leaving?"
"Soon," said Vera, casting down her eyes, gone dove-like and demure, she tried not to appear hurt. But her feet stayed apart, and that betrayed her put-on expression of meekness.
"I felt I owed it to my mother to come as soon as I could."
Arden leaned forward to better watch her expression, dragging me along with him as he forgot his arm about me.
"I don't want you in my house,"
snapped Papa.
"I know what went on here before you left."
Oh, dear God. Vera threw Arden a nervous, warning look. Immediately, I pulled free from Arden's casual embrace and moved to the far side of the sofa. No, I tried to tell myself. Vera was deliberately trying to involve Arden and ruin my marriage. But Arden looked guilty. I felt my heart crack. All along he'd claimed I was the only one he loved, and Vera must have told the truth a long time ago about sleeping with Arden.
"Papa," appealed Vera in her seductive, throaty voice. "I've made my mistakes. Forgive me for not being what I should have been. I've always wanted to win your approval and be what you wanted, but nobody told me anything. I didn't know what Mr. Rensdale wanted when he kissed me and started petting."
"He seduced me, Papa."
She sobbed as if with shame and bowed her smooth cap of shining, orangey hair.
"I came back to pay my respects at my mother's grave, to spend Thanksgiving Day with the only family I have, to renew our family ties. And I also came to collect what valuables my mother left me."
Again, Papa grunted.
"Your mother had nothing of value to leave you after you ran from here and stole what jewelry she had, and what jewelry my wife left Adrina. Thanksgiving Day is a week away. Pay your respects at your mother's grave today and leave tomorrow morning."
"Damien," said Billy reprimandingly. "Is that any way to talk to your own niece?"
"It's exactly the way I talk to this one,"
stormed Papa, pivoting about and striding toward the front stairs.
"Don't ever call me Papa again, Vera."
He glanced back at Billy.
"It's our night out on the town. Have you forgotten? The movies after dinner in a good restaurant. Why aren't you dressed and ready to go?"
"We can't leave the house on the day your niece comes home," Billy said in her calm way. "She thinks of you as her father, Damien, regardless of what you call your relationship. We can always dine out and go to the movies. Damien, please don't embarrass me again. You've been so kind, so generous. I'd be so disappointed if you..." There she broke off, looking at him with tears in her eyes. Her tears of distress seemed to affect him greatly.
"All right,"
he said, turning then to Vera.
"I want to see as little of you as possible. And the day after Thanksgiving, you leave. Is that understood?"
Vera nodded meekly. Bowing her head, she sat down to lock her legs together and form a lap on which she could demurely fold her hands, a well-trained, modest young woman. And modesty was something Vera had never possessed.
Anything you want, Pa. Uncle Damien.
I turned my head just in time to see Arden gazing at her pityingly. From one to the other I stared, sensing it had already begun. The seduction of my husband. In no time at all, Vera and Billy were fast friends.
You dear, wonderful woman, to take on all this housework all by yourself, when my father could easily afford a maid and a housekeeper. I marvel at you, Billy Lowe.
Adrina helps a great deal, said Billy. Give her credit, too.
I was in the powder room down the hall from the kitchen, tediously trying to untangle Sylvia's wild mop of chestnut curls. Pausing, I waited to hear what else Vera had to say to Billy, but it was Billy who again spoke.
Now, if you'd do your bit and run the vacuum in the two best salons, I'd really be grateful. Be sure to use the attachments on the lampshades, furniture, and draperies. It would help Adrina. She really has her hands full trying to teach Sylvia how to talk and move correctly, and she's succeeding, too.
You're kidding.
Vera sounded surprised, as if she was hoping Sylvia would never talk.
That kid can't really talk, can she?
Yes, she can say a few easy words. Nothing is clearly enunciated, but understandable if you listen closely.
Holding Sylvia by the hand, we followed Vera to watch her enter the Roman Revival Salon, where she pushed the vacuum without enthusiasm. I loved Billy for putting her to work without asking, as if she assumed Vera would be willing. Not to be willing would spoil Vera's game. At least, I thought it was a game. Vera pushed and pulled the vacuum, but all the time her eyes were on the many treasures. While the machine idled, she pulled out a notepad and began to write. Very quietly, leaving Sylvia in the hall, I slipped up behind her to read over her shoulder. Number 1. Vacuum, dust, use furniture polish. Mirrors, huge gold leaf, worth a fortune. Number 2. Pick up newspapers, arrange magazines neatly. Lamps, Tiffany, Venetian, solid brass, priceless. Number 3. Should make beds before coming downstairs. Genuine antiques everywhere now. Oil paintings, originals. Number 4. Help with laundry. Don't use bleach on towels. Oriental and Chinese rugs. Bric-a-brac of porcelain and blown glass, especially birds. Number 5. Run for the mail early. Never forget. Checks stored in his office safe. Never saw so many checks come in the mail. What an interesting way to list your chores, I said when she sensed my presence and whirled around, looking startled. Along with the valuables, you want to run for the mail. Are you planning to rob us, Vera?
You little sneak, she snarled. How dare you steal up on me and read over my shoulder?
One always watches a cat who becomes very quiet. Is it really necessary to list everyday, ordinary chores? Don't they come naturally to you? As for the rest, most of it was here before. Everything has been refurbished and upholstered, that's all. Papa hunted up some of the older white fern antiques that had been sold. Since you weren't impressed before, why be impressed now? For a moment, it seemed she might slap me. Then she sagged limply into a chair.
Oh, Adrina, don't fight with me. If only you knew the horror of being with a man who doesn't want you. Lamar hated me for forcing him to take me with him to New York. I kept insisting I was pregnant, and he kept insisting I couldn't be. When we reached New York, we moved into a boarding house, and he went to teach at Juilliard. He was always throwing you in my face, saying he wished I was more like you, and then maybe he could have loved me. The fool. What man could enjoy a woman like you?
Then she flashed me a strange look and allowed tears to trickle from her eyes.
I'm sorry. You are very beautiful in your own way.
She sniffled, then went on.
While Lamar taught, I started my student nurse training. The pay wasn't enough to feed a parakeet. In what little spare time I had, I did some modeling for an art school. I told Lamar he could do the same thing in his spare time, but he was too modest to take off his clothes. Models don't wear a stitch. I've always been proud of my body. Stupid Lamar was too modest to do that, and too proud. He hated me more for showing myself to all those men in the classes. Every time I modeled, I'd come home to find him dead drunk. Soon, he was drinking so much, he didn't have any job at all. He lost his touch at the piano, forcing us to move to a slum area where he taught music to poor kids who never had the money to pay him.
That's when I left. I was fed up. The day I graduated as a registered nurse, I picked up the newspaper to read that Lamar had drowned himself in the Hudson River. She sighed and stared into space. Just another funeral I had to miss. I worked the day they buried him. I was glad his parents came to claim his body, or else he might have ended up one of the cadavers in the hospital where I worked. She grimaced before she looked downward. A heavy silence filled the room. I bowed my head, weighed down with sorrow for a man who'd wanted to help me and had fallen innocently into the trap Vera had set. I knew who'd done the seducing.
I suppose you're thinking I helped kill him, aren't you?
I don't know what to think.
No, of course you don't,
she cried scornfully, jumping up and beginning to pace the room.
You've had it easy, staying on here and being taken care of. You've never had to face the real world and all the ugliness out there, and all the things you have to do in order to stay alive. I've done it all, Adrina, the whole can of worms. I came back to help, and you don't want me.
Sobbing, tears beginning to course down her cheeks, she fell onto the sofa. Disbelievingly, I watched her cry. Billy, who must have been listening, came scooting into the room. In a flash, she was on the sofa beside Vera, trying to comfort her. Instantly, Vera bolted. A short, hysterical scream escaped her lips. Then she paled.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just that I don't like to be touched.
I understand.
Billy lowered herself onto the dolly and disappeared. You've hurt her feelings, Vera, and you promised that as long as you're in this house, you would never say or do anything to hurt Billy or make her feel unwanted. Vera said she understood. She was sorry, and never, never would she pull away again. It was just that she was unaccustomed to being touched by a legless woman, a cripple. I stared down at her shoe with the inch lift, perversely enjoying the way she blanched.
You can't notice my limp now, can you?
She asked.
We all have small idiosyncrasies, such as yours for forgetting.
Soon Arden was telling me whenever we were alone, usually not until we were in bed, what a wonderful help Vera was, taking so much work off his mother's shoulders, and mine.
We should all be glad she's back to help.
I turned on my side and closed my eyes. To turn my back was my way of telling him to leave me alone. Quickly, he turned me against his front so that my back was fitted into the warm curve of his body. Our breathing coordinated even as those uncontrollable hands of his began to search out the curves he wanted to trace again and again.
"Don't be jealous of Vera, darling,"
he whispered, moving so he could rub his cheek against mine.
"It's you I love. Only you."
And once more, I had to let him prove it. Thanksgiving Day came and went, and Vera stayed on. For some odd reason, Papa stopped ordering her to leave. I reasoned he saw how much help she was to Billy while I taught Sylvia how to talk, to walk, to dress herself, to comb her own hair, to wash her own face and hands. Slowly, slowly, Sylvia was emerging from her cocoon. With each new skill she mastered, her eyes came more into focus. She began to make a real effort to keep her lips together and not let the drooling begin. In some ways, it was like finding myself as I taught her all she needed to know. In the first and best Adrina's playroom, she seemed to learn best. On my lap while we rocked together, I'd read to her from Mother Goose and simple books for very young children of 2 or 3. With the dolls and stuffed animals on the shelves for schoolmates, we sometimes sat at the small tea table and ate our lunch. And it was there that Sylvia picked up a tiny spoon and stirred the bit of tea in her miniature cup. And one day very soon, Sylvia is going to pick up her own knife and fork, and she will cut her own meat. "Cut meat," she repeated, trying to pick up the fork and knife and hold them as I was demonstrating. "Who is Sylvia?"
Who?
"Tell me your name. That's what I want to hear."
"Tell me your name."
"No, what is your name?"
"No, what is your name?"
"Sylvia, you're doing wonderfully well today, but do try to think about the reasoning behind what I tell you. Everyone and everything must have a name, or else we wouldn't know what to call one another, or how to know a chair from a lamp. Take me, for instance. My name is Adrina.
My name is Adrina.
Yes, my name is Adrina, but your name is Sylvia.
Yes, my name.
I picked up the hand mirror the first Adrina had on her small dressing table, held it before Sylvia, and pointed. See, in the mirror, that is Sylvia. Then I held the mirror so my face was reflected, and again I let her look so she could see what I was trying to impart. That is Adrina in the mirror. At the same time, I pointed to myself. Adrina. I pointed to myself, then put the mirror so she could see her own face. That is Sylvia. You are Sylvia. Some flickering small light lit up her lovely aqua eyes. They widened and focused on the mirror. She grabbed for it and stared at her reflection, holding it so close her nose was mashed against the glass.
Sylvia. Sylvia.
Over and over again she said it, laughing, jumping up, and dancing awkwardly around the playroom. Hugging the mirror hard against her small chest, she glowed with happiness. Finally, after many repetitions, she said it right.
My name is Sylvia.
I ran to hug her, to kiss her, to reward her with the cookies I'd hidden in a drawer. I turned with the cookies to see that all happiness had fled from Sylvia's eyes. Sylvia was frozen, her eyes unfocused, her lips gaped and the spittle ran. Once more, she went mute. Vera stood in the doorway. She wore the expression of an angel, so pious as she looked us both over. Lambs for the slaughtering, I thought irreverently. Go away, Vera, I ordered coldly, hurrying to protect Sylvia. I've told you before not to come up here when I'm teaching Sylvia.
Fool,
she snapped, striding into the playroom and sitting down in the rocking chair.
You can't teach an idiot anything. She's just repeating what she hears you say like a parrot. Go help Billy in the kitchen. I'm so damned sick of preparing meals and cleaning house. My God, it seems nobody does anything in this house but eat, sleep, and work. When do you have fun?
When the work is finished, Vera, I answered angrily. I caught hold of Sylvia's hand and started for the door. Rock in the chair, Vera. I'm sure nothing I've seen there would make you scream, for you've known it all. The whole can of worms. Screaming like a demon straight from the pits of hell, my small sister ran to hurl herself at Vera. She tore into her, scratching, kicking, and as Vera tried to ward her off, Sylvia clamped her teeth down on Vera's arm. Violently, Vera slammed Sylvia to the floor.
You screwy little idiot! Get out of here! I've just as much right in this room as you have.
I ran to save Sylvia from more harm as Vera raised her foot to kick, aiming for Sylvia's pretty face. But before I could reach her, Sylvia rolled out of harm's way. In so doing, her shoe caught behind Vera's foot and threw her off balance. Vera crashed to the floor like a felled tree. Then came the howls of pain. Even before I knelt to check, I could tell from the grotesque position of her left leg that Vera had again broken it. Damnation! The last thing we needed was an invalid to wait on. Fretting and fuming, I paced the Roman revival room as Arden and Papa came home carrying Vera with another cast on her broken leg. Her black eyes met mine, challenging me as one of her arms encircled Arden's neck. The other was around Papa. They supported her on the cradle they made with their arms.
Adrina,
said Arden.
Run for pillows to stack behind Vera's back. She'll need others to raise her leg above her heart level. She's got to wear that thing 7 to 8 weeks.
Slowly I gathered several pillows from other sofas and stuffed them behind Vera's back. Arden tenderly lifted her heavy casted leg and put 4 more pillows under it. Her red toenails wiggled like little warning flags as he tended to her.
How did Vera fall, anyway?
Asked Billy that night as I helped her prepare dinner. An accident. I heard Vera tell you that Sylvia deliberately hooked her foot behind her ankle, but I was there and it was an accident.
It was not an accident, screamed Vera from the other room.
The brat did it deliberately. Adrina, I hope that's not true.
Billy threw Sylvia an uneasy glance. Once again, Sylvia was riding on the little red cart, speeding down the slick waxed floor of the back hall. You know, Billy, both you and Arden find it very hard to believe anything I say about Vera. I don't mean to be overly critical, but it was the first real breakthrough for Sylvia. I saw her eyes light up with understanding, and then Vera had to show up at the door. I heard Sylvia singing as she raced up and down the back hall on that red cart.
Just a playroom, safe in my home. Only a playroom.
I almost dropped the spoon in the steaming gravy. Who had taught Sylvia to sing that song?
Are you all right, darling?
Asked Billy, pulling herself along by grabbing the countertops. I'm fine, I answered out of habit. But I can't remember teaching Sylvia to sing any song. Did you hear her singing, Billy?
No, darling. I didn't hear her singing. I thought that was Vera's voice. She sings that song a lot. It's like a child's song of reassurance, rather pitiful. It makes me hurt to think that Damien didn't show Vera more kindness, and she's trying so to make him appreciate her.
Silently, I poured the gravy into its bowl, then carried it into the dining room. On the way back, I pulled Sylvia off the cart and scolded her thoroughly. How many times do I have to tell you to leave that cart alone? It's not yours. Go ride the tricycle Papa gave you. It's red and pretty. Pouting her lower lip, Sylvia backed away from me. I pushed the cart with my foot into the kitchen. That evening, Papa and Arden picked up the purple chaise with Vera still lying there like an orange-haired Cleopatra, and she ate with us in the dining room. I hated seeing her on Mama's purple chaise, but there Vera lay, day after day, reading those same paperback novels she had read years and years ago. Sylvia retreated into herself, refusing to enter the playroom and be taught again. Because Papa had to have gourmet meals, and no longer could Billy be given relief by eating in restaurants with him, she did nothing but cook. I did all the housework, all the laundry, though Arden did what he could after he came home from work. Papa was always too busy or too tired to do anything but talk or watch TV. A month after the new year had come and gone, I led Sylvia again into the playroom to continue our lessons. I'm sorry I've neglected you, Sylvia. If Vera hadn't broken her leg, I'll bet you'd be reading by now. So let's go back to where we left off. What is your name? We had reached the playroom door, and to my surprise, and Sylvia's too, Billy was in the rocker. She blushed when we caught her.
It's silly, I know, but if there's magic in this chair, I want a little of it myself.
She looked very girlish and pretty. Then she giggled.
Don't laugh, but I've got a dream. A wonderful dream that occupies most of my thoughts. I'm hoping this chair will help my dream come true.
She smiled at me tremulously.
I questioned your father, and he said anything is possible if you believe, so here I am. And I'm believing.
She smiled and held out her arms.
Come, Sylvia. Let me hold you on my lap. Be my little girl today, and tell me what your name is.
No!
Wailed Sylvia, loud enough to bring Vera hobbling down the hall on the crutches the doctor was allowing her to use now.
Bad!
Yelled Sylvia, pointing at Vera.
Bad!
Sylvia would not sit on Billy's lap, but on another day, Papa found us both there rocking and singing together.
Just you, my love,
he said, looking at me and never at Sylvia.
Rock alone. Become the empty pitcher that fills with everything wonderful.
I ignored him, thinking him a fool on that particular subject. I turned to Sylvia, wanting to show her off in front of Papa. Darling, tell Papa your name. Only a moment ago she'd said it, before we started singing. Tell him my name, too. My small sister on my lap made her beautiful but sometimes terrible eyes vacant, so that they looked straight through him, and some babbling nonsense came from her lips. I wanted to cry. I'd worked so hard and denied myself many trips into the city with Arden to stay home and teach Sylvia. Now she refused to give me the reward I felt I needed.
Oh,
said Papa in disgust.
You're wasting your time. Give it up.
My husband seldom came home before 9 or 10 at night, Often he missed dinner, explaining this by saying he had so much paperwork to do, so much technical data to read, he had to study in order to keep